for a brand like ours, we're continuing to invest. I think there's brands that are further on in their journey than us, and that's awesome. But I'm really excited about what we're seeing and how we're able to act more nimbly, knowing that we are getting the word out very quickly for each promotion. So I think understanding our investments and knowing there's so many demands on our dollars, spending them in the right way and getting that great return on investment is really powerful.
Welcome to episode 97 of Clicks to Bricks, the podcast about multi-location marketing. I'm your host, Rob Reed. My guest today is Maria Hokanson, and she is the Executive Vice President of Marketing for Dairy Queen. This beloved brand will celebrate its 85th birthday next year. During that time, it evolved from its roots in soft serve ice cream to becoming one of the biggest QSR and burger brands in the U.S. Not surprisingly, DQ's marketing strategy is driven by emotional connection and, dare I say, personal indulgence. Maria talks about the brand's use of social media to connect with passionate fans, along with its mobile app, rewards program, and the brand's philanthropic support for the Children's Miracle Network at both the national and local levels. Can you get a blizzard delivered to your door? Keep listening to find out. Your AI is only as smart as the data you feed it. Why not feed it the best? Soshi, the leading co-marketing cloud for multi-location enterprises, empowers nearly 1,000 brands to automate and scale their marketing efforts across all locations and digital channels. Through the use of best-in-class generative AI and machine learning, the Soshi Genius platform provides multi-location enterprises actionable insights and recommendations while automating their most important workflows at scale. Visit meetsoshi.com to discover how Soshi can help fuel your localized marketing success. That's meetsoshi.com, meetsoci.com. Maria Hokanson, thanks so much for joining us on Clicks to Bricks.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
First question, where does this podcast find you?
Well, I am in sunny Minneapolis. We don't always get to say those words together, and very excited because we feel like spring is actually afoot.
Yeah, same. I'm in Park City, Utah. So yeah, lots of snow that's melting right now. And yeah, I can't wait to get on with summer, really.
Exactly.
Nice.
You're seeing people in shorts. It's like, well, might that be too soon, but please go ahead.
I've been to your headquarters in Minneapolis. If it's the same one from maybe circa 2014, have you guys been in the same office?
We moved. We actually moved. Yeah, but we just moved kind of across the street. So you'd be able to find your way to us.
Nice, nice. And Dairy Queen has been there for some time, been a Minneapolis-based company. How long?
Well, I've been with the company 20 years, so long before that.
Long before that.
The annals of history.
Nice, very nice. And you guys are back in the office, I see.
Yes, we're a hybrid. So we have two in-office days a week if you live by the Franchisee Support Center. We also have one in outside of Toronto.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah, for the Canada operations.
Yes, yes.
So as always on the show, I need to ask you about a fun fact about Maria Hokanson that most might not know.
Well, I guess I would say back how we have to do the unpaid internships to get the paid internships. So back in college, I worked an unpaid internship at the radio station in my hometown. And as the intern, I was assigned the moniker Danger Girl.
That was like your radio handle?
Yes, yes. I did not get to choose it, but I ran around and did shenanigans across my hometown with Danger Boy and things such as he was a human pinata, and I helped with that.
Wow. So you are an intern on the editorial side.
Promotions.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah. It really helped me with my future career path. Not really.
Well, I know a lot of these old school franchisees still like their terrestrial radio. So I'm sure it comes in handy occasionally, huh?
Absolutely. audio's made a comeback.
It has, actually. Well, it's like we're doing the modern version of it right now, right?
Exactly.
That's awesome. Yeah. So you understand podcasting, very, very deeply on a very deep level.
Thanks to my Danger Girl time.
All right. I did an unpaid internship, and yeah, and it was for a print publication. So again, it's kind of old media, but yeah, it changed my life for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You sit in the school environment and you learn some of the theoretical, but it's a whole different entity to get in the field and whatever discipline it is to start actually working it.
Yeah, and you weren't just like running out and getting coffee for the staff, right? Like you're out there actually doing it.
Absolutely. It was fun.
Being Danger Girl. So I'm very excited to talk about Dairy Queen, because I think like many people, maybe my age, the Gen Xers, I grew up with a Dairy Queen in my hometown. I have a number of core memories going there with my parents, getting ice cream cones. I eventually graduated to the banana boat. I don't even know if that's still on the menu.
It's not, but we could make it happen.
It was a rite of passage, though. It meant that I was big enough to graduate from an ice cream cone to a banana boat in the same way I graduated from like a hamburger to a Big Mac, right? But then also like my teenage years, like skateboarding in my little, hometown in Connecticut, like Dairy Queen was always a stop for us to get some refreshments. So for me, the brand is like really kind of imprinted in my memory from that perspective. So I want to start the conversation by actually talking about the Dairy Queen brand and what that stands for today.
Absolutely. Well, you encapsulated it so well. When we say we work for Dairy Queen, we get what we call a smile and a story 9 times out of 10. And my smile and story is a little different than yours, but I would go to Dairy Queen with my grandpa. And one time I actually convinced him to go twice in one day. And so really, that's our big brand differentiator. We're in the quick service restaurant industry at QSR. And as we compete against brands that sell burgers and chicken strips and things that compete with us, we find that the big differentiator is that emotional connection. And that's really driven through the treat memories and moments. And so when people think of other competitive brands, they think of more functional. I stand in line. I'm kind of like a number. Whereas at Dairy Queen, it's about moments. It's about sticky chins, things that you can think of that really lead to that emotional connection. And so how we've brought that to life in our vernacular for our brand is our mission is to create positive memories for all who touch DQ. And our vision is to be the world's favorite QSR. So you can see there's some intentional words there like favorite and memories that really dig into that emotional connection. And so how we've pulled that through to our brand positioning is really about amplifying joy in the everyday. And I think it just resonates so well with who we are and those memories, but we're working to bring that forward.
Well, the positioning must have evolved somewhat over time. I mean, because the Dairy Queen that I went to is, I think, just kind of like one format of Dairy Queen. Back then, it was the only format. And so how has it evolved? How has the brand evolved as the format has had to evolve?
Exactly. So next year is our 85th birthday as a brand. And I feel like we look really good for being nearly 85. But we began rooted in soft serve, just like you're saying. That is our superpower. And we compete and are best in class in the industry on our treats and in consumers' hearts, really, for treats. But I think it's surprising to know how much food we sell. So in the US and Canada, the overwhelming majority of our locations are what we call grill and chills. So they have the food and the treat menu. And when you think about it, not surprising that we lead in market share in mix-in treats, some of those things. But we're actually 6th in burger share, and we're number 2 in chicken strips. So as we work to evolve, we want to be that destination for the meal and the sweet finish, where you have that convenience to have the frequency of the food occasion, but also that amazing best-in-class treat occasion. So that's a big shift, and it's something that we're working through to evolve. And, you know, not an easy thing to evolve in consumers' perceptions.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Because, like, I mean, that's how consumers kind of organize brands, right? Like, you just get organized with kind of one thing, and it's not an easy thing to overcome to actually expand that. So, but you do have an opportunity with younger consumers to just basically start fresh. So let's talk about how you're reaching younger consumers. Cause I mean, I don't think my parents were reached with marketing, right? Like it was just down the road. Like, of course we went to Dairy Queen. There was no marketing involved other than just being there. But obviously today, in a very fragmented media landscape and so many different options, talk to us about that, starting with those younger consumers.
Sure. Well, there's a few key ways that we're doing that. First off, what I would say is our digital ecosystem. So whether it's our app, our rewards program, bringing into the funnel through our digital channels is really powerful and reaches that younger consumer. And we're earlier on in our journey on that. But what's wonderful is back to the powerful nature and emotional connection with the brand. For instance, we've been listed on Newsweek's America's Best Loyalty Programs for 4 years running, right? And so people react to the brand. So when we go out there, so we had to launch a new register platform. We called it an integrated technology platform. And we finally hit the levels where we could nationally market our MyDQ rewards program last year and our app. And so we launched an 85-cent download for a Blizzard promotion, and we're really elated with the response that we got. We based projections on what we saw other bigger brands seeing when they did download campaigns and really blew those away. So I think there's not only the opportunity to reach consumers through owned channels once they're in, but the fans, we call our consumers fans, the fans who are engaging with us in that way tend to be younger and looking for those moments. Another way is through our mid and bottom funnel. So really looking at social channels, TikTok, which is something to talk about today, certainly, but also Snapchat, and really working on building that engagement. We've really worked to be social first in how we're going to market in our organic, and it has paid off. Over the last few years, we've really leapfrogged and are in the company of brands that are bigger than us in our engagement. And I think that's a powerful route back to the connection. And then one fun current thing that we just launched that we're really excited about is, as you can imagine, as a treat leader, we get so many requests in social to bring back flavors. People have their favorite flavors. They get excited, angry, really emotional when they leave the store or come back. And so we launched just this past month what we're calling the DQ Freezer. And it holds all the innovation of DQ past. And we brought two flavors out of the freezer. We brought Brownie Batter, which is celebrating its 20th anniversary, which makes me feel old. And then also Frosted Animal Cookie Blizzard, which was our number one fan request. So we think that that has the opportunity to be an engagement brand treasure for us. And the response has been phenomenal on social so far. So we're really excited about that.
Well, I'd have to say, like, with having the Blizzard gives you a bit of an unfair advantage over some of your competitors in terms of your loyalty and app downloads. That's a powerful tool to have. And it does sound like, you know, a lot of your marketing is very product-led then as a result, right? Because you guys...
It is.
That's your differentiator, that these products that no other better to really have. They can try, but they're still not going to be a Dairy Queen Blizzard.
We feel like on the treat side, it's about really creating that reason to gotta get it now. So what we hear from our fans is that flavor variety. And really, if we come out with a Blizzard flavor, people know it will be done right and know that they can try it. And so that plus events like having the first day of spring be our free cone day or celebrations on the first day of summer, creating more reasons to come really helps engage those treat fans.
What does the footprint look like, though, in terms of, you know, how many Americans actually live around a Dairy Queen, which implies your ability to do effective national campaigns?
Yeah, so we are national and are able to really get that mass reach and awareness out. We have fairly strong penetration. I think we're, according to Circana, the 13th largest QSR. So I think we're bigger than you might think, but still have big runway for growth. And that's a really fun position to be in, especially with a brand that has emotional connection. So we are a challenger brand. Our biggest competitors outspend us, obviously. But what we're able to do is focus on that superpower, that emotional connection, our treats, and really leverage that to build food credibility as well.
What are the unit numbers then?
We have over 7,500 locations worldwide, and we're in 20 plus countries. US is the biggest, and then Canada comes in third behind China.
Nice, China, of course.
I know, right?
So what's the relationship like the marketing relationship between corporate and your franchisees? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely. So our franchisees are the lifeblood of the brand. And what's interesting is many fans think of a DQ as my DQ. And that is because our franchisees have brought that to life. And so for us, as we look at how we partner with our franchisees, it's critical because they're the ones bringing the brand experience to life. So what I work to do and my team works to do is really garner input, feedback from franchisees, from consumers, trying to understand the financial viability of ideas and making sure that when all of those come together, that's what we act on. And one of the ways that I think is a good example of that is when we were working on the evolved brand positioning, I think it can be alluring to write that in a vacuum. And what we did was really worked to engage our internal stakeholders, really understand franchisee perspective, and mesh that up with consumers so that when we launched it, it really hit home. And what that allows for is really people seeing, instead of it being, oh, is that something marketing needs to do their things? Great. It allowed people to understand, oh, I can connect with that. I can bring that to life. I'm going to paint that on the wall of my location. I'm going to make the home office really feel like a brand hug. And I think when you bring people along, you not only make the product better, but you also can help others see how it could be used differently.
Yeah, I mean, they really need to own that brand, right? And they're essentially the ones taking it to market for you.
Exactly, exactly.
So do they end up doing a lot of their own local store marketing? Is there kind of like a spectrum of franchisees that kind of do a lot and then some that do, you know, very little? And how do you support that?
Sure. I think that idea of that My DQ comes from, like I was saying, what many of them have activated. And I think the franchisees who've done it best, and there's a large swath of those, are really ingrained in their community. So they've worked to host post-game celebrations on their patios. The T-ball team plays in Dairy Queen shirts. They're engaged at places of worship. They do school fundraisers. So that all, and even the crew they hire are often high school students who kind of become part of the brand. So that local store marketing is really getting roots in the community. And that is what has led to how we're perceived today. And I think that's local marketing at its best. It's not just coupons. It's not activations. Sure, we can help provide tools for that. And we do, but it's really creating those and fostering those local relationships and ties. And On a national level, what we've done is we're actually celebrating our 40th anniversary partnering with Children's Miracle Network Hospitals. And what is so beautiful about that relationship for us is all of the money that a franchisee raises goes to their local children's hospital. So while we're able to fundraise as a brand, the money stay local. And so what's amazing is I've been able to tour a lot of local children's hospitals, and DQ has presence there because they've fundraised and made difference in that community, which is pretty cool.
You're intimately involved with that organization as well, personally, right?
I am. It's so wonderful to be a part of. It's, you learn all of the different ways that local hospitals need help, and this gives them unrestricted funds to do what they need for their community. So it's very valuable. And in our time with them, we've raised over $180 million. And so it's just a really, it's a sense of pride for us. And to have that long term of a partnership, I think that ability to act locally, but have that cohesive network is really a great tool for a brand like ours.
Do you think of that in terms of cause marketing, or is that just pure philanthropy, or maybe a little bit of both?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. I mean, I think a part of our brand DNA is that giving spirit and being part of the community. But we do look at how do we ingrain this? How do we talk more about it throughout the year so that the moments of fundraising aren't just the moments, but that we can be advocates for children's hospitals year round and really showcase some of that partnership?
Nice. I love that. Well, so we've talked about social, we've talked about local with the franchisees, we've talked about cause marketing. What else is there? And as a challenger brand, how does the kind of digital traditional mix look for you? Because I think in recent years, I've seen a number of brands go kind of to the extreme digital and be like, you know, all this traditional is too expensive, not measurable. Where have you kind of arrived at in 2024?
Sure. So, you know, as we look at our marketing funnel, what we've been really cognizant to do. So not too many years ago, well, I don't know, I guess that's perspective on how old you are. So let's just say 10 years ago, we were predominantly TV. And so what we've been working to do very diligently and very thoughtfully, I think what you were speaking to is we want to make sure that we're making our shifts and moves wisely. But we've been, that video medium is really important for us to get the word out quickly with reach. So we've been working to maximize that upper funnel wisely. So thinking about, you know, how do we leverage cable? How do we leverage streaming? How do we leverage sports? Really working with that to get the most out of that we can while building a mid and bottom funnel. And so I think what's beautiful about today are the tools that we have that we didn't have 10 years ago to help us assess that decision making. And what I think is really affirming is as we've added in these tools, it's indicated that we've been doing the right things and that we could tinker and learn. But I think it's been a wonderful challenge to be able to build that bottom funnel out because those are where the relationships are built. That's where you can really draw in people. We see when we've done some activations with what was Waze, you know, that we were able to really become top of mind when we might not have been and convert. So I think it's an evolution, not a revolution. And we've been working that. I think one of the big ways that we have really maximized the upper funnel is by going more into streaming and really thinking about that differently. But I think it's about being mindful, thoughtful, and thinking about the whole funnel.
Do you feel like the pendulum is swinging back toward traditional and you were already kind of hadn't gone to that extreme, so you're kind of in that happy medium already?
No, I think we've been evolving. I think it's been, we were so like 100% broadcast and cable. And now to make that as efficient as possible over the last decade or so, really worked to be mindful of what type of units we're buying, where we're showing up, making sure that we're following our consumers so that when we do get a message out there, we get it out there quickly and get the reach fast. But I think what's been really powerful is in social, using that as more of the paid social side, more as a powerhouse too. You think about Facebook and things like that, that's really upper mid funnel. So how do we use that wisely? How do we create that those buzz moments that, you know, may not drive to a certain chicken strip basket flavor, but get people to visit? So I think it's really about the mix and leveraging each channel for using its superpowers and doing that in a way that plays upon our superpowers as a brand.
So are there some things that you're doing kind of more of in 24 and less of in terms of marketing? If maybe you could speak to a couple of those.
Yes. So I would say one thing that was nascent really for us heading into the pandemic was delivery. And now it's a very meaningful piece of our business. And so for us, that's another channel, if you will, that we need to make sure that we're rising up in those third-party delivery apps, because people might not know that you can get a Blizzard delivered and it'll be great. And so, yeah, I'm here to tell you. So that is a completely growth-oriented, incremental channel that we need to fund appropriately. So we've been testing and learning, but we need to continue to invest. The other thing is really, you know, you think about how we go to market. We compete on food, we compete on treats, we compete on cakes, and we're trying to drive people into our digital channels. So, you know, how do we think through splitting that? And like I mentioned earlier, we're now at the point where we can market our loyalty program and our app nationally. So that is another thing. Sure, we can weave into other messages, but we also do need kind of pure messaging for that as well. And that's adding into what was already a complicated mix for us. So I think the really fun thing about marketing in this era is, and one of the challenges of it is the fragmentation, but also really placing your best bets on what's our next way in on this? How do we continue to grow this business? What day part? How do we make sure that we're hitting the consumer need in the right way and finding them in the right channel and hitting them with the right message?
Well, that's a good segue then to talking about AI, because that is a very complicated, you know, the customer journey has just gotten exceedingly complicated in past years. And I think that's one thing that AI can address. But in general, what does the kind of AI powered marketing conversation sound like at Dairy Queen today?
We're really in a seek to learn and understand mode. At this point in time, we don't have anything that's consumer facing that leverages AI, but we of course see the opportunity ahead. I think for us, whether it's AI or digital, it's kind of backing up even further. It's making sure that we don't lose that genuine personal connection. So I think knowing how important our emotional connection is. So I think that as we look ahead right now within the marketing team and with some of our partners, we're using AI to help streamline some efficiencies. So for instance, as we're editing content, we'll use AI for scratch reads. So then it takes somebody's time where they don't have to record it, right? Doing things like that. I think what's ahead for us as we continue our segmentation and personalization journey is I really see us being able to, we wouldn't be able to do this in a manual lift. So we'll need to use AI and other tools to get at segmenting and personalizing content so we're serving the right content to the right consumer to really help meet their needs and how they want to connect with us. So I see that in the not too distant future, but it really means that we need to better have that engine of personalization running.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. I really kind of feel like getting a Blizzard delivered at the moment, I have to say, but I don't have one close by, so.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I might just have to drive down to Salt Lake. Gosh, they really are so good.
I know, aren't they? They just hit.
It's such a guilty pleasure. Okay, small little like sidebar there, but I want to ask before we talk about your career journey, what's an unpopular opinion you have about marketing that you feel strongly about?
I struggle when the marketing role is relegated to kind of antiquated thinking. So, oh, they make folder graphics, or they just do the POP or things like that. I think the brand isn't just what we say outward facing. The brand is who we are. And who we are encompasses every decision that we make, the entire customer experience, how we go to market, what menu items we play in or don't play in. And I think limiting the idea of marketing devalues the opportunity for each brand. So I think that when you think about what matters in a brand, I think the biggest opportunities are those cross-functional ones where we're not acting in a siloed way. We're bringing the thinking together and really elevating. And so when we're able to be at the table and think that way is when powerful things happen.
Yeah. And I don't have any data on this, but I can think of plenty of anecdotal examples of marketers rising up to the CEO and the president level and just seeing those companies thrive because of bringing a marketer's background to the ultimate leadership role, understanding how fundamental it is. But yeah, you make a great case for, you know, having a marketer at the executive table when big decisions are being made. Like you mentioned, you've been with the company for 20 years, which is impressive and very rare for anybody, you know, especially a marketing leader, where the tenure tends to be in the single digits. So talk to me about that journey and some of the pivotal roles you've had along the way.
Right. Well, I am so lucky. The beautiful thing about working at DQ is it's a big brand, but a small company. And so what I love is you're able to make such impact on this iconic brand. And you get that feeling when you walk through the halls. I think everyone senses that and that we're all a part of this. So for me, what has been so powerful is every time that I started as a manager level. And every time, you know, you would get to the end of a role where you're like, I think I've taken this where I can. It probably needs some fresh perspective. And I probably need a different lens or different opportunity. I would have another opportunity kind of almost served up to me, which was just magical. I think I had 8 or 9 different roles within marketing. And to be able to bring that, I think, that fresh perspective to whether it's a category or a role, but also understand the brand and be able to work through kind of how things work in the company is a really powerful asset. And you know where the bathrooms are. You're not like starting from scratch each time, right? And so I feel so fortunate to have landed at a brand like this where I could grow and could have the opportunities where the brand is great, the people are great, the franchisees are amazing. It's just, I feel like I hit the jackpot on my career.
How big is your team?
So within the organization, and this is why I say small company, we are around 500 people within the organization. And within marketing for US and Canada, I have a team of just about north of 50.
Nice. Talk to me about like mentorship within your organization. Is that something that's kind of ad hoc, or is there a, you know, a specific program?
You know, we have a program when a new person joins where you get a Blizzard buddy. And so that is something that we just love as really defining our culture. But I would say that there really is a spirit of learning and sharing and growing. And one of the things that I've loved is working cross-functionally, getting stretch assignments so that you learn the other disciplines too. Because I think we're at our best. I'll use marketing as an example. Nothing will be successful if we can't bring it to life at the store level, right? And so really understanding that side of the business, not in depth, obviously, like an expert, but really understanding that side of the business to make sure that we use that as a filter is really powerful. And I think we do a nice job of working collaboratively. We call it better together, but that also is a form of mentorship, I believe.
Do there happen to be any open roles on your team?
There are a few. So if people want to visit dq.com and either tap or click on careers, we have a few positions open. There's an associate product and brand manager. There's a designer role that's open, a field marketing role. And then I think there's a couple international roles as well. So check it out. I think this is such a wonderful environment and brand to be a part of.
That's great. I love that answer. Yeah, we will include those links in the show notes if you didn't get those. So you can go right there. That's brilliant. All right, let's go into the lightning round. Let's throw out a couple topics, get a...
I love this.
Quick response. It could be a word, a sentence, what have you. Let's start with TikTok.
I knew you were going to do that. Challenging? I would say, political situation aside, I think it's a real great learning ground for brands, because whatever that becomes and however it evolves, I think that it has tapped into the zeitgeist of how we communicate. And I think that's going to be powerful.
Well, talk to me about ROI on marketing.
I think it's exciting. For so long, as an old school marketer, it felt art, not art plus science. And I think our industry will be at its best when we really are able to understand more. And for a brand like ours, we're continuing to invest. I think there's brands that are further on in their journey than us, and that's awesome. But I'm really excited about what we're seeing and how we're able to act more nimbly, knowing that we are getting the word out very quickly for each promotion. So I think understanding our investments and knowing there's so many demands on our dollars, spending them in the right way and getting that great return on investment is really powerful.
Agree. How about influencer marketing?
Evolving. I think that for me, it's about finding those genuine connections. I think when it was novel, it stood out more. And I think there's many, many ways it's become oversaturated. And so the places that I've seen shine where we've worked on it is where there's that genuine connection. And it makes sense as a brand, just in large scale brand partnerships. We have a fabulous partnership with Major League Baseball. Well, that is, of course, a great brand synergy, right? American Icons, Summer. And so I think that drawing that all the way down to even micro influencers, that same thinking has to hold true.
I love that. Final question. Are there other leaders in multi-unit enterprise, multi-location marketing that you admire and would want to see on our show?
Absolutely. I think there are so many people to learn from. One that I would love, I don't know her personally, but I'm a big fan of the brand, is Sephora. And the marketing leader there is Zena Arnold. And what I have, besides a vast love of Sephora, is a real interest in, I think they've done such amazing work in, for the product lines that they have, creating so many known guests. It isn't like they're marketing a big automobile or, you know, something like that. These are smaller buys, unless you're filling your cart and then like, wow, what happened there? But they have, I think, more known guests than unknown guests. And I think that they're so far ahead on their digital and loyalty journey that it would be fabulous to learn from them and her specifically. I think she's been a disruptor in the category.
Well, I have to agree there, because they know my two teenage daughters like probably better than I do.
I know. I should probably go get some self-awareness tips from them on me.
They are massive Sephora fans, so I really appreciate that suggestion. And yeah, I want to know their secret to getting my daughters to do whatever they want them to do.
I know. I'd love to double click on that.
Nice. Maria Hokanson, thanks so much for joining us on Clicks to Bricks. This has been fantastic.
Thank you so much. This has been so fun.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to share it on LinkedIn and to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, you can sign up for our newsletter at clickstobricks.fm for exclusive content and previews of upcoming shows. I'm your host, Rob Reed, and this is Clicks to Bricks, a podcast about multi-location marketing.